on this week's episode of Marketing O'Clock.
NPR, are we going to see any more tweets from National Public Radio?
Bard makes its first appearance in your Google Ads account, and I don't think you should use it.
There's an attribution revolution going on across Google properties that will surely touch your accounts.
All on today's show.
Welcome, you are listening to Marketing O'Clock. Just stay tuned. Digital marketing news, but let's get specific. Digital ads, SEO and analytics, social media and more. Pretty much everything that'll make your website perform. With new shows every Friday. We give you the news with sass and puns and definitely hot takes. Thank you for tuning in. You know what time it is. It's officially Marketing O'Clock. Settle in, sit back, keep it locked.
Hey there, I'm Christine Zernheld.
AKA Shep.
I'm Jessica Lee Budd.
And I'm Greg Finn.
And it's officially Marketing O'Clock.
Here on April 14th, 2023. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another wonderful, beautiful episode. Jess Budd, what's going on in your world right now?
I received the highest of compliments, or what I thought was going to be, from my son the other day. He looks at me, he goes, "Mom, you're a beautiful person." I was like, "Thank you." And then he followed up with, "You look like a pri-" I thought he was going to say princess.
Prisoner.
Prisoner.
What were you wearing?
I don't remember. I have blocked it from my mind.
Can I guess? All black.
I mean, probably, but like, who says it? But he meant, like, he was smiling when he said it. He was so nice. "Mom, you're a beautiful person. You look like a prisoner." And I don't know if I'm complimented or not, but I feel like it at least started well, and I'm holding on to that.
Stop wearing so many stripes or orange or whatever you're doing.
I wear none of those things.
Well, I'm going to talk about my kid today, too.
Wait, you have a kid?
Yeah, some, maybe two.
One and a half.
So you guys have kids, you know, like, you buy all these toys and then they just end up playing with weird things. I have this thing where she plays with toys, but she like uses them in the weirdest way. So lately she has this wooden loaf of bread that she's decided is going to be like her bedtime cuddle buddy, like a stuffed animal. And it all started, we get her dressed for the day the night before because I'd rather fight with her about clothes the night before than in the morning. Parent hack. And she had like a pocket on her sweatshirt and she had this loaf of bread and she like had it in the pocket and walked upstairs with it. So then it just became her pocket bread. And she'll literally wake up in the middle of the night and not have the bread and like walk into our bedroom and be like, "My bread!" And have to go back and get it. Like she needs it to fall asleep. She's like hugging this loaf of wooden bread.
That's the sweetest thing I've ever heard.
That's great.
She has more stuffed animals than anyone I know. It's so weird. Whatever floats your boat, I guess.
The grass is always greener, I guess.
Greg, what about you?
Well, we're going to go to Greg's review corner here because I think 3 months into being an iPhone user, and I've been Android my whole life, and I'm going to do a quick comparison here for you. When it comes to phones, and I'm going to talk Pixel phones specifically, the notifications on iPhones are maybe the worst thing in the world. The fact that you have those little red bubbles popping up everywhere, like what year are we in with these notifications? How you swipe them off is unbelievably bad. The taskbar, there's like not even a taskbar.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, what's a taskbar?
The Pixel has like a taskbar at the top. You can see notifications. You can see what they're from. You can swipe down. You can perform actions in there. An iPhone, you're so limited. It's so terrible. The camera stinks. I got the newest one, and I got the Pro, and it stinks compared to Pixel. The Photos app is atrocious compared to Google. The display of the phone, I thought that Apple was going to be better. It is 10,000 times worse. Typing is impossible. I don't know how people do it on an iPhone.
Typing.
How is it different? Awful. Android, it's smooth. It fixes things. It's so much better. And then the bane of my existence, the absolute bane, is voice to text. Pixel is so good. You can mumble anything in. It'll transcribe it. Unbelievable. Siri can't figure any. You can't use it.
She can hear you.
You cannot use the thing. It is unbelievably bad. And I'm like, why don't people use voice to text? Oh, it's because you have an iPhone. It doesn't work.
The audio messages are so much more fun.
It doesn't work. None of it works, but iPhones have iMessage. So 10 out of 10.
It's worth it.
It beats everything else.
You can reply. You can have threads. You can react.
You can't have a pixel.
I don't like the threads.
You can't have a pixel. iMessage is so good. It renders every other part of this stupid phone like you live with it for iMessage.
I know.
It's incredible.
It's really funny it's the how only judgy thing people it has are going. About your text color. Yeah.
So you're not going back?
No. I can't either. iMessage beats every single thing I just whined about. It's like the deciding factor.
I think it is for a lot of people, actually. Yeah.
It's crazy. All those other negatives, like you have iMessage, and that's the positive.
So well, I'm sorry that you're perfect. So unhappy.
I'm happy. I have iMessage.
Remember we were talking about first world problems last week?
All right. And in the main news this week, we have some fairly big news from Google on the ads and the analytics front. And Ginny Marvin from her at ads liaison tweeted out, today we announced we'll be deprecating, whatever you all want me to say, non-last click rules-based attribution models, which includes first click, linear, position-based, and time decay in Google Ads and GA4. Data-driven attribution, aka DDA, is recommended, and last click will remain available. That will remain available.
I think its days are numbered.
And she goes on to say, more on why and the timing. Why? The use of rule-based attribution models has dropped significantly with the introduction of DDA 3 years ago. I'd argue against that. I've got DDA, lots of accounts. At the end of the day, attribution is made for a reason, and DDA, which is data-driven attribution, you can't see the formula specifically. It takes the analysis aspect out of it in a way, and I'll get to that in a minute. She goes on to say, fewer than 3% of conversion actions in Google Ads use them now. DDA is the broadest adoption and is available to all businesses with no data requirements. I'll get to that in a minute too. She then says, the timing. Time decay, position-based, linear, and first-click attribution models will no longer be available to new conversion actions in GA4 starting in May and in Google Ads starting in June. They'll begin to sunset in September. So you just can't set them up in May and June, and then they're going to be gone in September. Okay, and if you don't know what these things are, time decay was basically like a half-life on a conversion. So it kind of would like gradually like decrease based on the time between touches. Position-based, you could set things in analytics with a certain model tool, like on the model comparison tool on GA3, and you could like build your own conversion attribution. It was something I use a ton. I would love to see for prospecting campaigns and like weight the first touch for 70, the middle touch for 20, the last touch for 10, or however you want to do it. And then also you could have removed things like direct traffic to really see where those touches came from. And then the other item that I don't know how you're getting rid of is a linear.
That's insane.
Linear takes every touch point that Google sees and it just splits the weight
It's so easy. Just keep it. It's something.
I have a theory as to why that's going away. Mm. And then first touch attribution, which is pretty important mm-hmm. for many people. Especially if you're targeting top of funnel, especially if it's a very tough purchase, if you have prospecting campaigns, etc. Like, so those are all going away. You still have last touch attribution, which will let you see what actually helped to push that, the final touch that pushed the sale. But the biggest issue that I have with this is we don't know what the formula is for DDA.
Right. It's been the complaint the whole time.
Yes. In DDA, it's going to be different for all your accounts. And at least with something like linear, you could have figured out what DDA is, which is why I think they're going to take linear away, is because if you could figure out and take a sample conversion and see that conversion was 25, 50, 20, and then 5 or something like that, you could figure out what the DDA like markup is for the day. Ginny also had mentioned in there's no data requirements. And when DDA first came out, if you recall, we reported back in July 2022 when Google Ads made DDA the main attribution default. The eligibility requirements at the onset of this was you needed to have a minimum of 15,000 Google search clicks, a minimum of 600 conversions for a conversion action within 30 days. And after you started with DDA, you needed to have 10,000 clicks for the account or 400 conversions for a conversion action within 30 days. And they kind of took that and threw it out the window when they launched this. So again, we used to have a variety of different options. Now moving forward, it's going to be data driven. And in the analytics side, I think is where it's going to hurt the most. Like, I don't think that you can just have, with this change, Google Analytics 4 anymore. You're going to need something better, because when you can't see the actual, we are in a data world, a world of data. Data has never been more important. And with something like DDA, you don't get to figure out what those formulas are that Google is saying is the most impactful. It just chooses it for you. And you might have something that's performing or finding people, and if Google decides that's not impacting conversions, yes, I might have a tinfoil hat on at the moment. Like, they might say Google Ads was the main driver of this conversion value here.
I'm sure they will say that too.
I mean, why wouldn't you say that, mm-hmm. right? So you can't actually see what that formula is now, which is honestly, it's a non-starter for many things. If you want to actually get data, you will have no data that you can use to analyze other than last touch with this. Everything else, you don't have the formula as to how they calculated it. And I would imagine even if you're in your Google Ads campaign, because DDA is in there as well, you might see some formats like a performance max or something that every rep under the sun is trying to put you in. More into that to come later. You might see that saying, hey, this is the one that really drove the conversion. The problem is when Google decides what it is and doesn't tell you what it is, you can't make any scientific analysis of that because you don't know what those percentages are. Furthermore, Dwayne Brown followed up with Ginny and said, I just had to double check. This means the GA4 model comparison tool would have these attribution models removed in September. And Ginny said, the model comparison and conversions path reports will be available in GA4, but limited to cross-channel DDA, cross-channel last click, and ads preferred last click. Oh, weird. There's ads preferred. And she also said, for DDA, conversion paths in GA4 will show conversion credits for early, mid, and late touch points and can be filtered in many ways, which is a giant nothing, and then has a bunch of other stuff here. So I am saddened for this, and I think it's time that we should come up with a recommendation for what analytics package to put on alongside of Google, because at this point, there is going to be far too many biases, in my opinion, for Google Ads when they are creating the attribution models while also offering an ad product. And people are going to roast me for it, but I don't care. That's my thoughts.
Next up here in the main news from Gil Gildner from his @GilGildner Twitter account. He said, one of our team members, Christina, just found this feature where you go to create a new RSA inside the Google Ads interface. Google Bard integration into Google Ads. Is this new? And he has a screenshot of a Google Ads account, and they're going to set up a responsive search ad. He puts in the URL for his agency, Disco Sloth, which I'm obsessed with the name. And he can put in a path. And then from there, all it really is guiding him to do is, it says Google's AI can help you create your ad. Google can suggest ad headlines and descriptions based on information about your business. And then it has a text box and asks, what is the product or service you want to advertise? Describe the product or service you're advertising and what makes it unique in a few sentences. And then you can press a more prominent call to action that says get suggestions, or there's a less prominent option that says write my own. And this really isn't surprising. And I feel like this is the way things are going to go, and they're going to want us to be leaning into this AI to write our ads, which is really, really scary. Like, you have a few sentences about your business and you're going to have ad copy with 15 headlines and 4 descriptions. Like, how do you know the value propositions? Are you going to talk about pricing? So I ran a couple different scenarios through Barb. That would be a better name. Bard. And I did it for like SaaS, and it was making offers. And I know it's, I said Google responsive search ad, and I know this is probably going to actually stay within character limits, I would hope, in Google ads. Even though, didn't we report on them making recommendations for longer headlines?
Yeah, yeah. I need to bring them in.
But when I was using it, it had a bunch that were like way too long, offering discounts. Like you can't, it just wants to generate ads on your behalf without knowing anything. Like this is an example where I would never recommend using AI to just write ad copy. Like it does not know the nuance. So I had an example for Pocket Bread, a toy for toddlers. And Bard said, sure, here's a Google Ads responsive search ad about Pocket Bread, a toy for toddlers. Some headlines were Pocket Bread, the fun and educational toy for toddlers. Soft, plush bread that toddlers can stuff with toys, snacks, or their imagination.
It's not soft, first of all. Never mind the rest of it.
So why would you want to stuff a toy and a snack together? And your imagination is already
I'll
in
stuff
there.
My imagination anywhere, but maybe not in Pocket Bread.
Like, it's trying to be clever. Teaches toddlers fine motor skills, hand-eye coordination, and creativity. Again, it's a Google product. I would hope it would know that the headlines need to be less than 30 characters, and none of those are less. Then the descriptions are way too long. Then there's a call to action, which is not part of an RSA. Again, Gil's example was like actually in the Google Ads interface. This was not. So hopefully it would be better. And then at the end, they're recommending review extensions. And it says, great toy for my toddler, says John Smith. And my toddler loves Pocket Bread, says Jane Doe.
Can you just do that?
You can't. That's what I'm saying. They're talking about pricing in my SaaS ads. They're like making offers. You can't just use AI to write your ad copy. Like, it's never going to be an option. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think the big thing here is when you look at a lot of these AI headlines, they're really bland. And I know that's what Google wants you to do with 25 characters with RSAs because you can't get that creative anymore. But like Pocket Bread, the fun and educational toy for toddlers, like if people start using all this AI, there's a huge market for people with a brain in their skull that can write.
This could be great for real marketers.
Yeah. Good marketers. Yeah. So again, everybody's always panicked over the stuff. And in this case, no, use it to help if you want. But anybody can beat these headlines like Bard created.
Should we keep the optimistic train rolling here?
Absolutely. Choo choo. Okay.
So our last piece of main news here is from NPR for NPR. And the article is titled NPR Quits Twitter After Being Falsely Labeled as State Affiliated Media. So this label, for one, is the same that is used to classify, this is a quote from the article, propaganda outlets in Russia, China, and other autocratic countries.
From an NPR article.
Yes, from an NPR. Yes. Yeah, it's from NPR. So take with it what you will, but yes. So that was bad, right? They were mad about that. The Bird updated the label on the Twitter account, changing it to government-funded media, which is also not accurate. It sounds less bad, I guess, but the news organization said that this is also misleading because NPR is a private nonprofit company with editorial independence and receives less than 1% of its $300 million annual budget from the federally funded Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
I read somewhere that it was 2%, but either way, 1%, 2%.
Still very small.
And they're always asking me for money, so.
Exactly. So anyway, lots of hullabaloo around this, and NPR is going silent on the platform, being Twitter, in order to, as the CEO John Lansing put it, protect its credibility and its ability to produce journalism without a shadow of negativity. They feel like these labels are not only incorrect, but also make them look bad, right? For lack of a better word. So don't get all conspiracy theory just yet, though. If you see some tweets still out there, there's a 2-week grace period while the staff can adjust their social strategies. But I think the big takeaway here is something that John Lansing said. He said, at this point, I've lost my faith in the decision-making at Twitter. I would need some time to understand whether Twitter can be trusted again. And I feel like a lot of people are feeling that for many different reasons. We have more stories later about some just wild things that Elon Musk is saying. But it's hard out there for a journalist.
Yeah, and I don't think state-affiliated makes any sense
it
at all.
Doesn't
seem like that.
Connotations are not. It's just not correct.
Correct. But government fund, like, I don't know if they're government funded.
2%, 1-2%.
I don't know what if there's a definition of it. I know NPR was set up by Congress. It was like a congressional act to make NPR. So like, the
it's not funding
started.
Though. It's like endorsement. Yeah.
Right, but know. Like, should you, if you're getting a substantial amount of funding from the government? Should you disclose that? I don't know.
I don't know. There's probably guidelines for these labels, and maybe they're out there. I don't know. But it does seem like something, if they're just going to be labeling things or changing them because they feel like it's inaccurate. If there's an evaluation process in place, they're not following it if they're then just going to backpedal and give you a different label. So I just think the bigger picture here is not whether who's right or wrong. It's just that things are wild.
To me, I would like to see anything government funded, but that's like even like medical companies. Like if you're getting money from the government, that would, I don't know, that'd be helpful, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying you wouldn't want to know these things, but. Mm-hmm. Seems like it's happening in a weird way.
Also, Greg Stradamus here, looking into the future. NPR will be on Twitter in 1 month.
You think?
100%.
I think they're good. I don't think the label's going to say the same thing, though, right?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But like you're again, even if you're getting 1%, 2% money from the government, you can't be on TikTok, and they're on TikTok. TikTok is an entity owned by somebody that you don't have good economic or world relations with at the moment. Like, how are you on TikTok and you're not? I don't know. I don't see it happening from a traffic standpoint. I don't see it happening from an Elon standpoint. Should it be considered government funded? I don't know. I have no idea. But it should. It's definitely not state affiliated. That's a huge mistake.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll hear more about it in the coming weeks.
Now it's time for this week's Take of the Week. This is a hashtag fire digital marketing take with extra spice served up for you. We simply deliver the take for your consumption. We give no opinions. We don't influence. You make the call.
This week's Take of the Week comes from the one, the only, Julie Baccini at Neptune Moon on Twitter, PBC Mom. Dwayne Brown had asked a question or said, basically, DSAs have been acting really weird and awful in some e-com ad accounts in March. Is DSAs at the end of their life? We've seen that in our accounts right about March 14th, a big drop. Julie advised that it's a good shout. I have one DSA and it's definitely struggling to spend. Melissa Mackey, Powerless Urban Show, said, we're getting good results from DSA, but you're right, the campaigns are struggling to spend. To which Julie Baccini, this is the first time I've ever heard this, she said, I guess they haven't applied the, quote, broad matchification, end quote, to it. Laughy face. So I just like that word, broad matchification. When Google wants something to work, they'll make it work. The broad matchification of it. It's like, yep, they put the broad maxification on PMAX, that's for sure.
Synonymous with indification.
Now it's time for this week's ICYMI.
ICYMI, people.
This is something you just might not have seen. Maybe something that you overlooked, but you shouldn't have.
ICYMI people from Power Listener in our Discord community, Christina. She is sharing a cool trick she learned from a Microsoft ads rep, and she has a screenshot of, I think this is a help document, and it says ads will not be shown to customers under 18 years of age if the ad content is determined to deal with mature subjects. But you can also opt out of showing ads to customers under 18 years of age, regardless of your ad's content, by submitting a form. And there's a link to the form in this article. So if you are like me and kind of scared of like kids clicking on your ads, this seems like a nice way to get around that if you can submit this form and avoid showing them, or it could probably help you with some like brand safety things in general if you just want to make sure your ads aren't showing the kids. So it's a nice tip.
I also like that the content is determined to deal with mature subjects classified as gambling, tobacco, weapons, violence, alcohol, or hate speech.
Are you going to point out that it says tobacco and not nicotine?
No. Maybe don't allow.
Where's like stuff?
Jessica.
Is that that's
missing. You're not supposed to have those ads anyway. I think that's the point Greg's making.
Can we not have an ad? Can we get rid of the hate speech?
Yeah.
Why are you running ads on hate speech anyway? What are we doing here? Like, how about no hate speech ads?
I agree. Take it up with Microsoft.
I hate it.
Now it's time for this week's
pew pew
lightning round. At this point in the show, we split up our content into three parts: paid, organic, and social.
First up in the paid universe this week from the Creatopy blog, this is the state of digital advertising in 2023, an overview. This was written by Octavia Drexler and brought to our attention by Power listener Diana Aldea. So you may worry that this is pretty depressing if we're talking about the state of digital advertising in 2023 and you follow the news with us. But there's actually some news in here to be optimistic about. She says 2022 revenue hasn't dropped. And these are just like big headlines that I'm pulling out. Ad budgets are growing. Advertisers want to experiment with more platforms. So there's some good stuff happening. And if you want to read about that good stuff, you can head over to the Creatopy blog and download the full report. We will have a link in our newsletter and in Discord. Marty from Blue Fusion tweeted from his @BlueMarty Twitter account. He says, so the deadline for ETAs with ad customizers got extended from March 31st to June 30th, 2023. Maybe someone important is still using them. We certainly aren't. This is one that I actually forgot about, so I'm glad they're moving it out and we're getting the reminder. I don't have these in my account, so hopefully I would know about it if I didn't, if I did have them running. But if you have like an account with a lot of ETA set up and you are using ad customizers, I would definitely go in there and pause them. Next up from Dario Zanoni from his @DarioZanoni Twitter account, he tweeted, just noticed a fresh certification in the Google Skill Shop, and it is AI-powered performance ad. Surprise, surprise. He says, sounds fun. As expected, it includes plenty of courses related to PMax campaigns, but also one with the title Apply Recommendations Automatically.
I like you can get certified in that. Like, yeah.
Who would, what? Can you imagine like applying to an agency and having that certification on your resume? Like,
you're not getting hired.
We saw a resume with that. Why does this exist? I'm reading this news live, you guys. I'm stunned.
It's a 7-minute course, too, according to this. That's a long time.
Now it can be updated with those new RSA writing.
I personally got a lot of value out of the 6 minutes that was discover the value of optimization score. Imagine that. You have to make a course, discover the value of optimization score, because it's so hyped up.
I feel like they would need a lot longer to convince me that there's any value there.
Why do you need a course to apply recommendations automatically? There should be a course of how to turn them off.
Yes.
Yes. That's what we're doing. Yes. We're doing the fight AI-powered performance in your ads account.
Thanks, Dario. Let us know how it goes if you take that one. Next up, Tales from PPC Reddit from user Celentic. I don't have where this thread started, but it doesn't matter. He said, I had a Google rep tell me his family would starve if I don't switch everything to PMax.
It started with an example of a really bad email, and everybody's commenting about how awful their interactions are. And this person said that they'll starve, and then did you get to the best?
Yeah, and then Zenonia said, is this for real? And Celentic said, I swear on my ROAS this happened. Late last year. During holiday campaigns. Swearing on your ROAS.
Swearing on your ROAS.
Serious. Yeah.
Man.
And this screenshot, I would like to point out, if it's in the notes, is from Greg. So he didn't include the context, but he was sure to include that he has a targeted AARP ad in his Reddit. Look,
I have a new biological scale that said it thinks my age is 35.
What?
Because it looks at my vitals.
Oh.
I'm more than a number, Jess.
Here we go.
I'm more than a number.
Age ain't nothing but a number.
No, I disagree.
As someone who's about to turn 35, your vitals are probably in much better shape than mine. So you are being undersold?
I think I'm 31.
I also heard that there is no minimum age, but the R stands for retired, and you just won't ever do that.
Can I blow up somebody's spot? I'm going to blow up somebody's spot.
Okay.
Nicole got an ad targeted to her from AARP as well today.
I think it's anyone who's tried a Zin. They just know.
They were grasping at straws for a thrill.
My biometrics
disagree.
Well, it's not good for your health.
You know what, Shep? I'm going to go out on a line here. I would say right now, I am more physically fit than you.
Okay.
That's not. You can't say that to a pregnant lady.
I mean, it's facts.
Greg, it's hard for me to roll over in bed at night. I'd have to agree with you.
She is creating a human life. What have you done?
I'm doing
some push-ups
thing.
This morning?
Zins.
Yesterday, yeah.
VidMob released its annual report on global LinkedIn advertising trends. It analyzes 800 million ad impressions from brands executing paid video advertising. So it's all about video campaigns on LinkedIn. So things that help with view-through, engagement, and click-through rates, according to this, are displaying messaging in the opening quarter of a video, 7 to 15 second video duration, high text contrast, showing a person in the opening quarter, like a real-life human being.
Oh, my.
Opening quarter. I hope I said that, not quarter. Offers, including get a quote and a brand logo in the opening 2 seconds. So if you're doing those things, you're probably in good shape.
We can go run a mile right now if you want.
You can. I literally can't. What's happening in organic?
All right. We don't have a sponsor this week, but if you want to sponsor the show, we have some openings. So get at us. We will sell your product. First up, Google is trying to sell their YouTube Premium product with 5 new features. The first feature says, take control of what you want to watch with queuing on your phone and tablet. This is a quote from the article that has never existed in real life. Are you the type who likes to jump from a Bad Bunny music video to the latest episode of Overtime from Dude Perfect? I've watched every Overtime from Dude Perfect.
Do you like Bad Bunny?
Do you know how I see those Venn diagrams? There's not a single overlap of Bad Bunny listeners and Dude Perfect Overtime watchers. It is something else. It's very well done.
Like me, one of the many people who discovered from the 2023 Grammys that Bad Bunny is really handsome. Well, I never knew before.
Bad Bunny is completely different than something made for toddlers. Dude Perfect is for toddlers.
He's not even a rabbit.
Okay, no, 5-year-olds, 8-year-olds, whatever. Anyway, so what you can do is you can say, I want to queue up what's going to play on my TV next from your phone. Again, you have to be premium to do this. Premium is different than YouTube TV, which is different than YouTube Music as well, just for the record. You can also now watch YouTube together on Android and iOS. You can do that through live sharing on Android devices, or you can use, they're going to roll out for FaceTime users on iOS via SharePlay. Additionally, the third thing is you can jump back into YouTube across devices. So if you're watching something on your TV, you can then watch it on your phone. Again, this doesn't apply to anybody unless you're premium. So just keep that a note. And they will also download, when you're connected to Wi-Fi, some videos that automatically to your phone that you think you'll like. So it's downloading videos so you can watch them offline.
I don't want that.
I don't want that.
I don't think anybody does. And lastly, you can enhance your video quality on iOS only. It is a test. It is not for Pixel users. So again, still iMessage by the iPhone. And all users will have access to 1080p, but the enhanced 1080p quality setting will look extra crisp and clear, and only for those premium members. I, to this day, do not understand why, like, Twitter is failing. Twitter can't run ads. Twitter doesn't have an ad platform. They're making people pay for it. Why don't you just make YouTube better? Why don't you bring this to everybody and then get more people using YouTube and sell more ads in the future? They're just trying to make a buck today. It drives me insane. Insane.
I can feel it.
All right. From Brian Frieselbaum at @type_SEO on Twitter. He says, super interesting to see Google labeling key moments within a YouTube video as pros and cons in this video. Sort of amazing they're able to understand that without any user input. And the example just shows that there's pros and cons in this video. Probably a lot of reviews. If only there's a way to see like pros and cons to a video itself, like a like or dislike. That'd be cool. That was still one of my favorite explanations ever. Remember that? Like, there's some bot attacks we can't figure out. We have to get rid of the dislike button.
You won't let us forget.
I will never let you forget that. You're the people that have to like prevent click fraud, and you can't stop a few bot attacks on the dislike button. And that's why you have to get rid of the dislike button.
You want us to blindly trust your data-driven attribution.
There's bot attacks. We got to get rid of the dislike button. Get rid of yourself. All right. Next up, Bard in Search from Glenn Gabe. He says, Sundar Pichai confirms Google plans to add generative AI to search, dismissing the threat to its ads business. A lot of people talked about a quote that was from the article, but the quote wasn't from Pichai himself. It was from the author, and they said, Mr. Pichai's latest comments indicate that Google plans to allow users to interact directly with the company's large language models through its search engine. That move could upend the traditional link-based experience that has been the norm for more than two decades. That is from the author, not from the actual interview. So just want to put that out there. The internet was obviously abuzz with this as well, and there was an article over on Search Engine Land that had an answer from a question about how the web will survive if there's less linking off to publishers from Bard. And Pichai had said, I think through our work across, I think we'll be committed to getting it right with the publisher ecosystem. In search today, while these things are contentious, in search we take pride. It's one of the largest sources of traffic. If I look at it year on year, the traffic we send outside has only grown. That's what we've accomplished as a company. Part of the reason we're also being so careful with things like Bard, amongst many reasons, we do want to engage with the publisher ecosystem. So seems like the initial launch of Bard was horrendous. Maybe there'll be citations, and hopefully they'll actually try to send traffic outside of themselves. All right, from Business Insider, the headline reads, the newest version of ChatGPT passed the U.S. medical licensing exam with flying colors and diagnosed a 1 in 1,000 condition in seconds. In other news, Bard gave itself herpes.
Oh, my God.
And that's it in organic. What's happening in social, bud?
Something even worse.
I'm going to start social this week with a little segment I'm calling Musk Reads.
Ooh, I like this.
Do you get it?
Yeah. CEO of Twitter. It's news.
Yeah. Here's a tweet from Elon. Our landlord at SFHQ says we're legally required to keep sign as Twitter and cannot remove W. So we painted it background color. Problem solved. I don't know what the fuck this is in regards to.
I don't get it.
I'm not reading what he said after that. I'm not saying that word.
What's the joke?
Why would you do that?
Is it just over my head?
He's removing the W. I'm not saying it.
Saying what?
What Twitter sounds like
this
without a W.
This is a family podcast.
But why is it? I don't understand. Like, did I miss something? This was in regards to nothing. This was just up.
Yeah, what like, I didn't know.
I looked for context.
What would it be if you removed the W?
It would be Twitter without a W. I'm not saying it.
Saying what?
I will not read it. But somebody replied and said, congratulations, you've made everyone root for a landlord. So there's that. What does this mean? They tried to muffle our... What does that mean?
He's just
I think he tried to take the W off.
Right, but he can't.
He said he can't.
Right, so he just painted it white like the rest of the sign. But now it just says to-itter.
What does it say?
It doesn't say... I'm not saying that. I'm going to read this one because this is even more insane. He tweeted...
Oh my God.
He tweeted,
he needs to take a nap.
He, what from Texas tweet? Lindsay.
Okay.
There it says, breaking. Elon Musk shut down his pro-censorship BBC reporter and left him scrambling on how to justify his own questions on misinformation and supposed to rise in hate speech. Listen till the end, shared something.
It doesn't seem that bad. That's fine. That's a fine statement.
That's fine.
Okay.
Elon Musk says, penetrating deep and hard with @BBC, which for those of you who have not used Urban Dictionary, I suggest that you try it and look up. It's not British Broadcasting Company.
What is it?
I'm not saying it. People are worried about NPR. This guy's going off the rails. He's got like, what the fuck are you doing?
Not that funny. I don't know.
It's not funny.
I guess I'm lame.
He's removing the stupid legacy blue check marks on 420. Like, how old are
and
you?
And the rollout started on April Fool's Day.
This is like middle school.
All of them are gone then? They're all going up in smoke?
Oh my God.
You know, Cheech and Chong are still alive. No, stars of the film Up in Smoke. I just feel like when everything is a joke, nothing's a joke.
Agree.
This is ridiculous. Okay, on a more serious note, pun intended, late last week, just one day after Substack announced a new feature of theirs called Substack Notes, writers began noticing that they were no longer able to embed tweets when creating a post on Substack. And according to Mashable, Twitter is now blocking likes, retweets, and comments on tweets that include a link to a Substack newsletter. In addition, Twitter users cannot pin a tweet that includes a Substack link to their profile. So,
It appears to be an attack specifically on Substack, as these issues are not persisting elsewhere in the platform. And it, notes essentially brings, this is from the article, brings a social media-like feed with tweet-like posts to the newsletter platform. It's not exactly a Twitter competitor as it exists within the newsletter platform's ecosystem, but it sure does look like one. And people are out there tweeting basically that they are happy using Notes so far. And if you're looking for a Twitter alternative, go there. So I say move over Mastodon.
Maybe Substack should just remove the T, paint it white.
Oh my God.
I just spit all over my computer. I had to read it to see what that was. Substack, everybody. Twitter's latest attempt to entice users to subscribe to Blue includes promising that Blue subscribers will see only half as many ads as non-subscribers. So they're half-adsing that. Get it? I made a joke. A funny Elon-like joke. Not perverse enough, I guess. All right, moving on to TikTok. Matt Navarra noticed that the option to upload a video with a 10-minute duration is missing. There's no official word on this change from the platform itself, at least at the time of recording. This was hot news yesterday. But he wasn't the only one to see it live. People are unhappy about it, too. So,
well, maybe they should just remove the Ks.
I'm done with this game.
All right, according to Piper Sandler's Spring 2023 Taking Stock with Teens survey, very, very wholesome, TikTok's favorability is decreasing among the youth, but it is still their favorite app. Snapchat is next, and then Instagram. If teens are your target demo, some other important takeaways from this is that 31% of teens spend their daily video consumption on Netflix. That seems like an old lady thing to do. And 28% on YouTube. As far as where the kids are spending their allowance, food is the top category for guys and clothing for gals. Nothing really surprising there. All right, this is good. Meta Verified is under fire in sex work circles for revealing users' legal names. Apparently, to get your fancy blue check mark on that platform, better customer support, and exclusive stickers, you have to use your legal name, not just for verification, but as the name that is publicly displayed on your profile, which I'm not sure is a detail that we had ever talked about before. So that's quite obviously an issue for people whose profession requires some discretion, or even if you just have a stage name, you don't have to be a sex worker to have a stage name. Anyone that doesn't go by their legal name, creators and civilians alike, this is kind of a problem.
Like your butcher babies.
Exactly. Heidi the Butcher. That's her Twitter handle, but that couldn't be her name on Facebook. It would have to be Heidi Shepherd. She has no belly button.
Wait, her last name is Shepherd?
Yeah. You guys are kindred spirits.
I wonder if she spells it the same.
You can look it up later. Anyway, interesting implications there that I'm not sure anybody really thought about before. But here's an interesting thing. So this OnlyFans creator, Abigail Mack, said that she has already monetized paid subscriptions on Instagram and Instagram Shop. So she receives regular payouts from Meta. She had to give them her government ID before for tax purposes and all that, and was allowed to use a fake name then, but only just to be verified. You have to display your real public name. So it's just crazy that you can run a business and do all of these things, but the second you want a check mark, you have to be who you really are. You've already proved who you really are with your ID. I don't know. It's very interesting. There's a lot of drama there, and it makes sense. And privacy advocates are mad too. It's not just sex workers. Sticking with Meta, some news by way of the man, the myth, the Glenn Gabe. He tweeted, Meta enters the generative AI mix to be used in ad creation and the metaverse. Meta CEO says it plans to begin commercializing its generative AI in 2023. So basically just trying to help you write ad copy.
I think it's generative.
It's generative?
No.
It's generating. Generative, I don't know, whatever. I can't pronounce meta either, so it doesn't matter.
You've ruined me on that, for the record.
Thank you. You've ruined Twitter for me. Last up here in social, you may or may not remember, back in October, Meta announced that Facebook Instant Articles would be sunsetting, and since then, only existing partners have had access to it, but the time has finally come, people. It is dusk. A notification in the Meta for Media Instant Articles resource now reads that mid-April 2023, they will no longer be available. So you'll still have access to insights and monetization until then if you're using it, but go in the way of the buffalo. RIP and peace.
And that brings us to our real life segment. Straight out of our accounts and into your ear holes. It's time for Working Hard or Hardly Working, where we talk about what's going on in our IRL work, good, bad, or otherwise.
I recently had a working hard about custom columns, and now I have another one. If you use them to break out your conversion actions, so I have one where I have like every demo request form submission coming in, and then I have another conversion action for an MQL and SQL, etc. If you have custom columns for all those individual conversion actions and you don't need the segment for conversion action to see that information, then you can add other segments and see like how SQLs differ depending on the day of the week or the time of the day. So it's cool that you can break out your data differently if you have that set up. So I just love custom columns these days. Jess?
Hot tip on Google Ads scripts. The team discovered a workaround. Maybe you knew it, maybe you don't. When you create one, whoever the user is that created it, it won't let other users edit it. But if you just change the frequency at which you want the script to run, then you can go in and edit the script. So that's really handy. I had no idea. Huh. Yeah. Greg?
Something working hard for me is we had a client with some gigantic catalogs for shopping campaigns. We were able to get a lot of information into the feed, especially like warehouse locations, which is pretty critical for this client, as well as the margin on each product. And we basically reconfigured everything, you know, rebuilding everything, and it's working better than planned. And I just appreciate it when you have an idea, you can see it through from the technological side, get that feed, and then actually see it come to life. It's just unbelievable. Working hard.
And now for this week's
Cool Tool.
As a reminder, our Cool Tool segment is not an official endorsement or paid mention. We're simply sharing something we found in our travels that may be of use to our listeners. And is really, really cool.
This week's Cool Tool is the 21 best ChatGPT alternatives. You get the gist. It's a list. From Tom Demers. Nobody laughs, so I just laugh at myself. From Tom Demers for Search Engine Land, it's a collection of alternative AI tools broken down by what each one is, does, and who it's best suited for. So kind of based on what you're trying to get out of it, or if you're looking to combat specific frustrations you have with ChatGPT, he lays all that out. It's really nice. It's a great repository. So bookmark it for sure if you're playing around with AI. Again, that is the 21 best ChatGPT alternatives. As always, we'll have the link to the article in our newsletter as well as on Discord. So pick your poison and check it out.
Now it's time for our must-read marketing article of the week. An article so advanced, so in-depth, so detailed that we simply cannot cover it in its entirety on today's show.
This week's must-read marketing article of the week also comes from Search Engine Land, from Jess Schultz, called How to Master Google News Optimization to Boost Content Visibility and Traffic. And I love the byline here. It reads, Google News-driven results send over 24 billion clicks per month to publishers. Here's how to claim your share. Great writing by Jess. Love AI it. Can't do that. Jess goes on to talk about how Google News aggregates and amplifies story exposure, that it's not as simple as the few bullet points that Google provides, some branding essentials for Google News SEO, technical essentials for Google News visibility, and then content essentials for Google News rankings and how you can understand the impact of Google News optimization. Thank you, Jess.
And now onto our playlist of curated songs to work to. You can head over to playlist.marketingandclock.com to listen to Marketing a Playlist. I will be picking a Taylor Swift breakup song because Taylor's going through a breakup.
She is?
Mm-hmm.
To the Bon Jovi guy?
No, that's Millie Bobby Brown.
Sorry, there's too many breakups in my life right now.
Taylor Swift is not a child bride, okay?
Also, didn't she? Yeah, she got engaged. She didn't break up.
Oh, that's the opposite.
Yes.
Well, when one door closes, another door opens, right?
Is that a Bon Jovi joke? I'm not familiar with that library.
No, I'm just saying, like, confusing. Okay. I was happy. I was happy for Millie Bobby Brown. And
I don't Millie care Bobby about Bon Millie.
Okay. So wait, what artist did you choose again?
I'm picking a Taylor Swift breakup song because she's going through a breakup.
You picked Taylor
Swift?
But
I'm picking one that's not that sad because I like to think that she's not that sad. It was just time. So I'm going to go with The One. Are you familiar?
You picking Taylor Swift too?
What? No, I did not pick Taylor Swift. Queens of the Stone Age, Smooth Sailing.
All right, spring's back. I'm going to do one everybody's going to like again here. I'm 2 for 2 on my cycle. Ones that everybody like. You've heard this before. But spring's back. Summer's around the corner. PPC Greg's going to like this too. Mike Posner, Mama Always Told You.
All right, that does it for today's show.
It is now officially Not Marketing O'Clock.
Thanks for listening.
We miss you already.
And we can't wait to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Marketing O'Clock. If you're looking for more information on today's topic, head over to marketingoclock.com/newsletter to receive every single article we cover. We share the news as it breaks in our Discord community. Head over to community.marketingoclock.com to join.
Welcome to this week's Shootin' the Heck. We're after our famous Friday news show. We don't talk about marketing anymore. We just...
Shoot the heck.
Today, we are back at it with everyone's favorite game, Poke Holes in This.
Yeehaw.
Where we present ideas that we believe are unpokeable, and then we prove each other wrong. I will go first. Greg Finn recently had to move offices here, and it inspired this idea.
Okay.
So your old office was kind of prime real estate, and you're not here as much. You're in Rochester.
Yes.
So we moved you like up front, and I'd be like, you missed us. So now you like pop around desks. We never know where you're going to be.
Yeah.
We have a tally.
Because you don't like being far away.
Yeah. I got to keep guessing. I'm out on the killing floor.
They've got standing desks. What about rolling desks? Ooh. With a little, you could also be like working out all day.
Can I punch this up?
Roll it with your own feet like Fred Flintstone style. Move around the office.
And it's got a battery, so you can plug right into the battery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And your computer.
Yeah.
But for your version, some people might want a button to be able to like move it around them like with a motor, but yours wouldn't.
No, you got to push
Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's unpokeable.
It's a pretty good idea.
I don't see any issues with this at all.
Okay.
Other than the wheel, but you need a lock. Is there a locking mechanism on the wheels?
There has to be.
Then I'm all in.
Okay.
Unpokeable.
We have to invent
it. Can we add
a
horn? Like Greg's coming.
Yes.
That would be so great. I'm excited about this. Okay, Jess, what's your idea?
Mine is equally brilliant. Everyone loves the smell of car wash when you're going through and getting your car washed. Why do we not have car wash scented air fresheners, candles? Why is that not a flavor I can just buy?
They got new car.
Not the same as car wash soap, though.
I agree. But what it's like cherry, though. Like, what is the flavor of car wash?
Car wash.
The outside of your car?
Like, when you're in the car wash, that just smell of the soap coming in just smells so good.
I used to work at a car wash. So I'm jaded. I hate car washes.
Did you come home smelling like a car wash?
No, but there's so much dirt and grime and filth.
You don't smell any of that from inside your motor vehicle as a customer.
I know, but I just would have traumatic throwbacks to it. So I'm out.
I'm anti-car wash.
Sounds like a you never problem go. To both of you. I think it's brilliant.
Greg, what do you have?
Okay. So some people go keto and go to the gym a lot and lose a lot of weight and their clothes don't fit them anymore.
Fancy.
Just I've heard
some people.
I've heard that a bit. Just in my travelings, right?
Yeah.
So what if you make a drying machine that is like a rock tumbler, right? You put in what you used to weigh and then you put in what you weigh now and you're like, you need to dry it this long to shrink your clothes so they fit so you don't have to buy new clothes.
Because there's no going back.
Isn't that a good thing though?
They make shoe stretchers. They could make clothing
Depends
stretchers.
On who you are.
It's opposite stretcher though.
Right. She's saying there's no going back. So are if you gain more weight and you love that shirt.
Are you buying this for your home?
Yes, I would like to shrink my clothes.
If anything, they should have an industrial one at the gym.
Oh, I like that.
That's a
industrial,
nice idea.
Yes.
But I think it's disrespectful to people like me who are gaining the weight back.
Yes, but what if you had this amazing maternity shirt that you wanted to keep wearing
Great
after
point,
you have the baby?
Jess.
What if I'm going to have another baby and then I lose that shirt for that opportunity?
Then
you never know what's going
to
happen.
The stretcher. We just need to invent two products is all. Because also, like, losing weight is great and hooray, but, like, then you're going to bulk up and build muscle, and then you might need a little more room in the shirt. So I feel like even you, Greg, want this to work both ways.
I wasn't talking about me either. I was talking about
Of course
else
not.
Though.
Of course
and
not.
And somebody else's style, I feel like, has kind of upgraded as well. So it's been a nice opportunity for that, for someone. You know what I mean?
I have style, though? Wait, I mean, my friend has style.
Let's not take this too far. Okay, I have another niche one, and it's also clothing inspired. There's a man across the street who lives in a house across the street from our office, and the weather's warming up, and sometimes he's out there in what we thought was his blue boxer shorts.
Definitely look like boxers. I mean, you look at this, 100 out of 100 people be like, that man is in his boxers.
Yeah, it's really disturbing. But then one day, saw him reach in, take a pack of cigarettes out of a pocket, in the boxers. So they're not boxers, but it made me think, why don't they have pockets in boxers? That would be very useful for a lot of gentlemen.
Yeah, you could keep all your secret things in there that you then have to reach when you're like normal wearing pants. You have to reach into your pants to dig into your boxer pocket and then you're fishing around in your pants. I feel like that's inviting all kinds of questions.
I feel like people would love that.
I don't get boxers. Or boxers with pockets.
Are we allowed to ask if you boxers or briefs kind of guy?
I'm the combo.
Boxer briefs.
Hmm. I don't know why you want to wear
shorts. You could put a pocket in those too. It just might need to be in the back.
I think men's underwear come with a pocket. That would be so gross.
Well, that's like a pocket for something else.
What?
Just things in the front.
I think this gentleman across the street is onto something and we need to invent.
I could see that you could like have like a little thing to like, you may, might need a little more compression though to hold up because the more stuff you put in, that's the problem is like you don't want the boxers or the boxer briefs to fall down.
Your pants are keeping them up.
No, they're not really.
Okay, so belt loops and pockets on boxers.
Oh yeah, boxer belts. Love it.
Yes.
Okay, Jess, what's your next one?
I want somebody to get the science and create a speaker that I can plug into my ear so when I'm thinking of a song and I can't sing it to you, it will play what I'm thinking so you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. I'm not a magician.
I mean, if it was anybody but you, I probably would support this, but I don't want to hear Slipknot.
It's so true. She told me about the Butcher Babies yesterday.
Do you know the Butcher Babies?
No, I don't.
It's like an amazing lady metal band.
I told her I can't listen to this. My baby can hear noises outside the womb. So, too much. Greg, what's your next idea?
All right, we're going to keep it here with dryers. This is the world's first ever. You're going to love this. A washer dryer combination. Now, I'm not talking about stackable. I'm not talking about side by side. I'm talking about something you put your clothes in. It washes your clothes. There might be like a 30-minute cool down transition, but then what it does is it spins those clothes and it dries those clothes.
That saves you one step. Are you sure it doesn't exist?
I would have purchased it if it exists. And then you can take your spot for your other one and you could just put another one there and then you could do double the laundry at once.
Man.
Washer dryer combo.
What a great idea.
It's still going to take. What about like the hookups and everything?
You don't have to go down just, and move the.
You already got them there.
Yeah.
It might be a little bigger, but one and done.
I hate when you have good ideas.
I know, that's a really good idea.
Okay, let us know if you have any additional holes to poke in our grand plans, and we'll see you next week.